welcome to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
There's nothing like waiting till the last second to come into the studio and get things fine. Well, literally the last 7 seconds, up until just 7 seconds before airtime, we were having a little trouble here, my producer and I, getting everything 5x5 so I could broadcast to the world this evening. But with 7 seconds to spare and not a second more, here we are, and here I am to welcome you to another live installment of the award-winning Political Cesspool radio program. It is Saturday evening, January 16th, and we are coming off the heels of a very impressive program last week, which featured, first of all, Dr. Kevin McDonald, and then, of course, Hutton Gibson, a man who absolutely gave him hell in the program that was hosted by myself and Bill Rowland. Hutton Gibson lived to tell about it as well. This is a guy, as you know, Mel Gibson's father. He was our guest last week. He has never been one who was afraid to speak his mind, and he certainly lived up to that reputation. Any listener of our show who missed last week's program should visit our library of archives at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Do yourself a favor. You won't be disappointed with Kevin McDonald and Hutton Gibson. Tonight, we've got an equally impressive lineup, at least as far as I'm concerned. Sam Dixon, one of my all-time favorite guests, one of the most well-spoken and articulate people in the paleoconservative movement, and Gordon Baum, another highly accomplished movement leader, the CEO of the Council of Conservative Citizens. So the political cesspool, I tell you what, ladies and gentlemen, we are coming out of the gates with both barrels blazing as we open up this new year with no limits 2010 in the political cesspool. And here, of course, to help shepherd me through the first hour of tonight's program, Keith Alexander. Keith, how are you tonight?
I'm reporting for duty as usual, and like you said, we start out the year red hot and rolling, as you like to say.
Red hot and rolling, absolutely, Keith. Man, I like it when my little monikers catch on. Now you're even saying them, so that's great. It just goes to show the power of radio persuasion, I guess. I do want to mention one more short administrative note. As you know, this is a show that has grown by leaps and bounds. We continue to welcome an ever-growing audience, and because of that, our mail delivery system was recently overwhelmed. You know we love the notes, the concerns, the questions, the critiques, and most of all, the encouragement that we receive from our listening audience. But if you tried to email us over the course of the past week to 10 days, there's a chance that it did not get delivered. As I said, due to the overwhelming amount of correspondence that comes into the program, our email addresses were just overloaded, so we had to have our webmaster go in and clean out the system. But now, if you go to our website and go to the contact page, you can get in touch with any one of us there now. So again, just a little short administrative note to start off the program. If you've tried to email us within the last week to 10 days and we didn't reply, it was probably because we didn't get it. And now we have fixed the problem. I was alerted to this problem a few days ago. And sure enough, you bankrupt us, ladies and gentlemen. You absolutely shut us down, all that good email coming in. And we love it, and we love reading it. And now we'll be able to read it again thanks to our ingenious webmaster. All that being said, Keith, I want to, before we get started with Sam Dixon, who will be coming up in the next segment, I want to say a quick word about Haiti. First of all, and it should be said, and this should be pointed out, it's an absolute tragedy, and that's not something that, you know, we take any pride in. That's something, it's a horrible travesty. You don't want to see death and destruction befalling anyone. You don't want to see this type of carnage. I wouldn't wish that on an enemy. And so there's nothing good that's happened with the chaos that stemmed from that earthquake down in Haiti this week. But almost of equal disdain is the ill will I feel towards the American government for taking it upon themselves to allocate taxpayer money to the Haitian relief effort. I think that the president has a responsibility to go on, if he feels so led, and go on television and radio and encourage the American people to give. There's nothing wrong with charity. And make no mistake, there's nothing wrong with European Americans giving to the Haitian relief effort. Where there is a problem, there's two problems. Number one, when European Americans give at the expense of their own children, when they give at the exclusion of their own family, and that, I think, is what we've seen time and time again. There's nothing wrong with being benevolent, but when you're benevolent to a fault, as the Greeks said, all things in moderation, and certainly our people have done that, then it becomes a problem. So when you give at the expense and at the exclusion of your own family, certainly there are a lot of poor white Southern males that would like to have an opportunity to have their lot in life bettered. When you give at the expense of your own people, that is a problem, and certainly I think that's a problem that our extended family has. And then when the United States government unconstitutionally gives taxpayer money to any country, there's a problem. Keith, Davy Crockett had a few words about that, did he not?
Right. If you remember, hark back to those old shows that we did about Davy Crockett, one of his most famous speeches was called Not Ours to Give, and it was given in Congress when Congress was trying to vote a pension for the widow and family of a recently deceased naval officer. And Davy Crockett pointed out that there's no authority for this under the Constitution. This is a matter of private charity, and the taxpayer dollars cannot be used for things like this without creating a very dangerous precedent. Obviously, Davy Crockett went unheeded because, you know, a large segment of the federal budget now goes to just such operations as this. You know, it's unfortunate, but we don't have people of the timber and the character of Davy Crockett now that clearly saw what their proper role and what their duties were under the U.S. Constitution. We have people now that basically, if they serve in government, in the federal government, and they even acknowledge the existence of the U.S. Constitution, they look at it with scorn and see it as something that needs to be plowed under. The globalists don't like the distinctive aspects of any nation. And in particular, they don't like the fact that a wealthy and powerful nation like the United States cannot be totally compliant to their will because of a document like the Constitution. You know, it's something that struck me about this whole episode, too, is this entitlement mentality that seems to be coming back through news reports from Haiti. They're demanding, not asking for, but demanding aid. And they are angry when it doesn't get there quickly enough. You know, the whole nation, over half of its economy is based on foreign aid from France, Britain, and the United States.
See,
of course,
I mean,
we're leading it, and, you know, over 60% of their food has to come from overseas, and they have no money to pay for it, so it's nothing but a great, massive entitlement program to keep this nation afloat. And quite frankly, I hate to point it out, but this is exactly what happens when you have black people in charge of the government and a vast majority of blacks in the nation. It's just like comparing Hurricane Katrina with the floods they had in Iowa and Nebraska the same year and the chaos in majority black New Orleans versus the orderly, back to normal efficiency in Nebraska and Iowa.
Well, Keith, Haiti is truly a manifestation, if there were such a thing, as a fourth world nation. They're third world at best. So, yes, that's a concern that it's almost inevitable that what money is sent down there is going to be looted and not appropriated correctly. They don't have a functional government. The government that they did have before the hurricane earthquake couldn't really be considered functioning. But so you certainly got that to worry about. But again, it just doesn't matter because the American government should not be allocating this foreign aid. It's unconstitutional. It's perfectly well and good for Americans to be philanthropic, to be charitable. Doesn't matter to whom, but that should be their decision to make. The president should not arbitrarily allocate taxpayer money to help anyone outside of this country. And that's of course, something that's going on, and Keith, we're running out of time. Probably.
Well, let me just say this real quickly
before
we end. Here's what happens. Haiti is a perfect example of the truth of the old observation: be careful what you wish for, your dream might come true. Black racists have been wishing time and again that they could either kill off or run off the white population and rule themselves. Well, This actually happened in history in Haiti in 1802 in Toussaint Louverture's slave rebellion, and ever since, Haiti has been synonymous with ignorance, poverty, immorality, and corruption. So there you have it. If you want to see where it all leads, look no further than Haiti, right?
And there was, as you said, Keith, a very violent overthrow revolution down there in which the blacks, you know, murdered many, many whites, and now look at what they've gotten for themselves. We've got to take a break. Sam Dixon will be with us right after this.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
Don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood.
Please don't understand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand me, baby.
Don't let me be
misunderstood. Jump in the Political Cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. We are waiting for Sam Dixon to call in. Just talk to Sam. He is getting his groceries out of the car. He's going to be calling in momentarily. Would like to welcome you back to the show, of course, the Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards, joining me tonight for the first hour, as always, Keith Alexander. A little later on, during tonight's third hour, we're going to be joined by TPC co-host Eddie the Bombardier Miller. He has a special hour lined up for us a little later on. Co-host Winston Smith and Bill Rowland have the evening off. Bill taking a break after that big interview with Hutton Gibson last week, and we want you to check that out in the archives. While you're on our website, please consider supporting this radio program financially, talking about handouts to Haiti. We would actually like for you to volunteer to contribute to this program and keep our work going. We are listener-supported. You can donate online safely, securely at thepoliticalcesspool.org. And while we wait on Sam to call in, Keith, which should be any second, I guess we ought to just go on record here with a couple of sentences saying that the holiday that we are going to, I don't know, celebrate would be the wrong word, but the holiday that's forthcoming on Monday shouldn't be a holiday at all. I don't like to speak ill of the deceased, even if the deceased was a subversive agent. I don't want the ADL and SPLC to spit on my grave, and I'm not going to.
But they will.
I'm not going to. Well, they will, but I'm not going to engage in that type of commentary. But let's just face the facts here. And this is the facts according to the FBI, who were keeping tabs on Michael King, a.k.a. Martin Luther King Jr., back in the 60s. This was a known communist agent. He was a philanderer. He was a plagiarist. And his last night on earth, he spent in an adulterous liaison with, white prostitutes. So there I said it. Those are the facts according to the FBI. And this is the man, the only single man that we celebrate a holiday for, a federal holiday here in the United States. Keith, that's just wrong any way you slice it.
Yeah. How this whole fable of Martin Luther King came to be about is just a testament to the power of liberalism in the media. You know, in fact, this is the holy of holy, the high holy day for the liberalism religion that is inflicted upon American school children. Of course, any school child is more than willing to take a day off of school whenever it's offered for whatever reason. But, I mean, you know, just get ready for it. Here in Memphis, we have a professional basketball team, the NBA, and every year they have a special Martin Luther King Memorial basketball game, and all of these basketball ex-players and officials and administrators come down here and pay obeisance, you know, burn incense and whatever else, go to the National Civil Rights Museum that is here in Memphis, which basically exists by forcing black school children to come down and having white liberal groups pay $11 per head for them to march through this, sensitivity training center that they have down there in around the Lorraine Hotel and Motel in Memphis. And, you know, when you know the facts of Martin Luther King's life and the fact that he was a change agent, that he was anything but an exemplary human being or a admirable human being, it just makes you wonder how now he has eclipsed George Washington, for example, and all of the other presidents and all the great heroes of the founding of America, the people that really did make a difference for the good, Martin Luther King certainly made a difference, but look at how America has declined since the Civil Rights Movement. Look how, for example, in 1950, I was reading just the other day, America manufactured 96% of the goods that we consumed in America. Now, the manufacturing sector of the American economy is down to 12% of the total economy. We're like a third world nation. We're sending raw materials to China and India and places like that, and they send it back. Public education is in the tank, primarily because of the civil rights movement. We used to be at the top of the developed world. Now our public education system is at the bottom. What a thing to celebrate, James.
Well, Keith, I mean, and that, again, to come full circle, is the point. This is the only American that has a single holiday, a federal holiday related to him. You have President's Day. I guess to an extent you have a Columbus Day, but you don't get out of work. You don't get out of school for that. And so, you know, again, not to speak ill of the dead, I guess as a Southern man, I'm cursed with the having to be a gentleman.
The sense of decorum that your enemies don't have.
Well, exactly. But this is something, and those facts that I mentioned about King at the top of the segment, I mean, that was common knowledge back decades ago. It's taken them nearly 50 years to beat that out of the public consciousness. A lot of people who knew those facts are now gone themselves, passed away.
Well, you know, they have sealed the records, the FBI records on him, and that is really suspicious. You know, it's supposed to be opened in about 24, 23 years now, but I guarantee you they'll come up with some excuse not to do it, because quite frankly, if the truth were known, there is no way that you could hold up the charade of venerating this man as some type of holy man. He actually got the Nobel Peace Prize, and this is probably the first example of the degradation of the Nobel Prize system. It's now a joke. You know, look at the people who have gotten it. Al Gore, terrorist Nelson Mandela, terrorist Menachem Begin, Martin Luther King, philanderer and puppet of the Communist Party. You know, this is just, you know, it's ridiculous. I've never seen anything. It's basically the whole Nobel Prize system and the Martin Luther King holiday are monuments to the pernicious power of liberalism over our daily lives.
Well, we're going to know that the rudder has been turned and we've come back all the way. We've reclaimed America's destiny when our first guest of the evening receives the Nobel Peace Prize. And certainly he would be much more deserving of that than some of the men, all of the men you just mentioned, Keith. Our guest tonight for the first hour is a successful attorney. He's a noted author and an accomplished leader in this movement. He is one of my very best friends, a mentor, very wise man, and he's always in season when he's on as our guest, Sam Dixon. Sam, how are you tonight?
I'm fine. How are you, James?
Well, I'm doing good. Running about 15 minutes behind schedule here, a little late getting in, some technical difficulties, but I'm glad that we've got you on. How did the grocery shopping go?
Well, I went to the DeKalb Farmers Market. There aren't any farmers there. There are illegal aliens. I don't know about illegal aliens, but there certainly are aliens from every corner of the earth. It's kind of a miniature UN. But anyway, I have laid in my larder filled my larder for the week, and I've finished that.
Well, you've had your dose of multiculturalism for the day then, Sam. This is Keith Alexander.
Oh, hi, Keith. How are you?
Doing great. Well,
yeah, it's great to have both. Of course, Keith's a regular co-host, but Sam, always good to have you on. And we only have a couple of minutes, literally 2 minutes, before our next break. So with that, I would like to let you inform our listening audience as to the very interesting situation taking place in Fulton County, Georgia, which basically encompasses downtown Atlanta, Atlanta proper, if you will. Let us know, give us the breakdown of what's going on there, and then we'll fill in the blanks when we come back after the break.
Well, there are lots of stresses and strains along racial lines that the Chamber of Commerce and the news media don't really want to talk about. And overwhelmingly white city of Roswell, which is in the northern area of Fulton County, is trying to secede and recreate itself as Milton County, which is a county that used to exist but went bankrupt in the Depression. It was taken into Fulton County, but now they want out because they provide a great portion of the county tax base, and they get very little services in return. The city of Sandy Springs has been incorporated just north of Atlanta for much the same reason, to opt out of Fulton County. There's a lot of things going on in Atlanta. Atlanta politics are very different from what most people in the nation are told they are.
Sam, if you don't on the time, we got to take a break and regroup here. We're going to let you pick it up with that story right when we get back. Stay tuned, everybody.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll free at 1-866-986-6397.
There is nothing more regimented than commercial talk radio. Welcome back to the program, everybody. James Edwards and Keith Alexander here with you tonight. Our guest is Sam Dixon. You're listening to the show this evening on AM 1380 WLRM Radio in Memphis, Tennessee, and the AM FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network. Sam, you were sharing with us the current political happenings of Fulton County, Georgia. It includes Atlanta. It seems as though they are trying to, there's a movement afoot there to split Fulton County into two counties, one predominantly white, one predominantly black. Sam, pick up where you left off.
Well, anyway, Fulton County, for those, most of the listeners are not Georgians, and probably most Georgians don't even know the history of all this, but Fulton County is the largest geographic county in the state. It's a huge county, and it's really too big. It's 70 miles from side to side, from top to bottom. And it got that way because in the Depression, two counties were taken in when they went bankrupt. Milton County, which was the north part and the part that's trying to secede, and Campbell County, which is the south part of Fulton County, which is not trying to secede and has a substantial black presence. But one of the myths, that there are several myths that the liberal media and the Chamber of Commerce like to put out about the metropolitan Atlanta area. One of them is that it's very liberal. It intimidates the rest of the state to tell them that that Atlanta is the big center of money and in media and, about 40% of the residents of the state, to project the image that Atlantans all have some sort of a liberal agenda. They've got interest in common against the rest of the state. This is very beneficial to the liberal establishment for many reasons. One of the reasons is that it gets conservatives into an anti-Atlanta, anti-urban rhetoric, which is very harmful to them. There are lots of conservative votes in the metropolitan Atlanta area, and probably as many as there are in rural Georgia. And there is no community of interest in Atlanta. The interests of the white suburbs are not the same as the black areas of the city, and the interests within the city proper are not the same. Atlanta has been going through a tremendous demographic shift. In 1980, Atlanta was 70% African-American and 30% white. It is now about 51 or 52% white and about 48% black. We'll throw in some Hispanics, and I don't know quite how many there are. But Atlanta is no longer a predominantly black city. And this has been the opposite of white flight. It's been white return. And the recent mayor's election spotlighted that. The media hasn't wanted to talk much about that in Georgia. But the whites have been moving back in, especially since the Olympics in 1996. They've moved back in, and they're not happy with what they found. The city of Atlanta, according to a council person that I spoke with some months ago, a white woman, a liberal Democrat, but who spoke frankly with me about it, said that I can hardly believe her figure, but she's not one of us, and although she is not completely senseless racially, she said that 97% of the employees of the city of Atlanta are African American in a city that is predominantly Caucasian. And you see this in city offices. You can go down there and you go to the water department, you never see a Caucasian face. And as she pointed out to me, she said the 3% doesn't mean Caucasians. It means everybody else. It means Asians, whites, Hispanics. And, you know, they have just run the city of Atlanta into the ground. They have hired and hired and hired and feather-bedded and feather-bedded. Atlanta has just a crushing payroll that the taxpayers have to pay for. And there is no community of interest between these two areas of Atlanta. North Atlanta, which is overwhelmingly white, and South Atlanta, which is overwhelmingly black, have very little in common. And there is very strong antagonism. But the whites won't really talk about it. They use code words in this effort to create Milton County out of the city of Roswell. It's all talk about services and good schools, and we moved here because the schools, it wasn't about race. It was because crime was low and the schools were good. Race had nothing to do with it. At least this is what these people say publicly. I was very surprised when the city of Sandy Springs was created just north of Atlanta and incorporated because they wanted out of Fulton. I was very surprised that the Justice Department, Civil Rights Division, permitted that. You know, there can be no changes in boundary lines in the South without the Justice Department blessing those changes. And this was, you know, despite what all the white unwillingness to tell the truth, it was obvious that this thing was hugely fueled by race and that it will be harmful to black people and that it will take away resources that the blacks had by being able to tax that white tax base. But somehow they got the Justice Department to approve it.
Well, Sam, let me ask you this, and then I want to bring Keith back in on this. What's your prediction? What's the crystal ball say with regard to how the situation in Fulton County is going to turn out? If it does split, what are the ramifications of that, and how do you view the pros and cons either way?
Well, you know, I don't think that these little artificial drawings of lines really answer the problem. I think we need to be honest about things and talk honestly as adults about problems. So I'm not enthusiastic about the Milton County secession thing, and it's not going to do any good. I mean, you and I know that America's being swamped by immigrants, and that in Georgia as a whole, 50% plus of all the people under age 18 in the state are non-white. You know, and these are the things that have to be addressed, and moving here and moving there, the whole white answer to this stuff has been since World War II, or since the Brown versus Topeka Board decision in 54, mixing schools. So the answer of most whites has been to run. It's been to move one more expressway exit outside the city until that area goes black, and then they move another expressway exit. And, you know, I'm not impressed with that. White flight does not impress me. My grandparents lived in the area of South Carolina in the Santee River Delta north of Charleston, which was 95% black. And I spent the summers there when I was a child. They were not moving out because 19 out of every 20 of their neighbors were black. They were tough people, and they didn't flinch and didn't run away. You know, they didn't move to Montana. And I don't really think that the white leaving California and moving to Montana, or the whites moving further north in Fulton County, this is no answer.
Well, I guess on the grand scheme of it all, you're only delaying the inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, you are going to have to face these issues head on. At some point, you'll run out of places to run. Keith, what's your take on everything we've heard so far?
Well, let me start at the last and move forward. I, like Sam, am not impressed by white flight. I think the Council of Conservative Citizens and the White Citizens Council back in the day had the right solution, which was to create low-cost, non-exclusive, white private schools and have people stay put where they were, have the white people stay and have this alternative to the public schools, which have turned into absolute hellholes, as we all know, throughout the South, in any area that has a large minority population. We were just mentioning, Sam, before you came on, how in the 1950s, American public education was up at the top of the developed world. Now we're at the bottom, and it's all because of school desegregation through the Civil Rights Movement and the busing movement, which put the final nail in the coffin. Then you were talking about this reputation for cosmopolitanism that Atlanta has. I know this was brought up to us here in Memphis many times, how why can't we be more like Atlanta? You know, the city too busy to hate, it was called. And, you know, that it elected a black mayor, I think, back in the 70s, didn't they?
Yes, because it was because Atlanta was majority black. Atlanta has always been very racially polarized.
Quite frankly, 20%
white liberal swing vote. But you know, the idea that it is peddled around the state of Georgia by the political establishment, and that it's told to whites up in the mountains or in South Georgia that everybody that lives in Atlanta is a card-carrying member of the race-mixing multiculturalism cult. This is just nonsense. When you look at the voting in Atlanta, it is just black and white. That's how it votes. In the last mayor's race, we came within 700 votes of electing the first white mayor in over three decades. Had we had a viable white candidate, the white candidate would have won. Unfortunately, we had a woman who's on the city council who is just pathetic and is an airhead. This will shock people and make a lot of your listeners angry at me and fuel people to criticize me, but I don't care. I voted for the black candidate in the runoff for mayor because the white candidate is just such an airhead and such an incompetent.
Sam Keith, sorry to interrupt again, got to take a break. We're going to pick it up where we left off right after these words from our sponsors.
Don't
stay tuned, everybody.
The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We gotta get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do, we gotta get out of this place. Girl, there's a better life for me.
If I didn't tell her, I didn't. Welcome back. To get on the Political Cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
Sometimes the very best conversations that take place during this show happen during the commercial break when my guests and my co-hosts have the chance to kind of work things out, and some very good points were made just in the last couple of minutes while everyone else were listening to the commercials. Keith, fill them in on that.
Well, we were talking about white flight and how that factored into this whole situation in Atlanta with this, you know, trying to create a white suburban county out of part of the county. And, of course, we had the same situation happen in Memphis back in the late 90s when, again, the northeast quadrant of the county tried to break off and become Neshoba County. White flight doesn't impress Sam, it doesn't impress me, and I don't think it should impress anybody that has the best interests of this country at heart. What it is, it's a colossal waste of resources. What happens is white people sell their homes at a loss because the neighborhood is turned black. They move to a new neighborhood and buy a house at a premium, at a higher price than they should because it's white and the public schools are white. But this whole demographic shift is always in a state of flux. And as we said over the break, blacks are always going to follow the whites wherever they go. You know, you can run, but you can't hide. And the reason is there's a parasite-host relationship here. Don't kill the dog or all the fleas will die.
You even mentioned the word, Keith, colonization, which I think really brings us into focus.
Yeah, right. We're basically white people, when they move, we're colonizing areas for blacks where they can buy your church for 10 cents on the dollar and your home for 50 cents on the dollar. Then when they run that into the ground and that thing starts becoming an irretrievable ghetto and they start pulling down houses and empty houses proliferate, then they just move out to the neighborhood that you built before to get away from them. That's, you know, you can drive through Memphis, you'll see that story replayed time and time again. You look back and say, this was the white flight of the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s. And it keeps going on, and as a result, white people don't have money to retire. They don't have money to send their children to college. And it's all because we follow this, you know, we'd rather switch than fight. We need to set down the roots. We need to do what the council, the White Citizens Councils, proposed originally, which was to create private academies that are inexpensive by purpose, on purpose. They keep the cost as low as possible. They're non-exclusive, and they are to provide an alternative to the public schools for whites, and whites should stay put. You know, like we said, you can run, but you can't hide.
Well,
what do you
think,
Sam?
Yeah, Sam, your thoughts on all that.
Yeah, that's exactly it. After Reconstruction, my ancestors returned to the area of South Carolina they lived in north of Charleston, and at that point, that parish of South Carolina, area of South Carolina, St. James Parish, Santee, was, well, I think the census in 1880 showed there were 5,000 blacks and fewer than 50 whites. But the whites came back and got what land back they could from the lands that the Yankees had confiscated and given to the blacks, and they run away. White people who flee from blacks, you know, it does show a laudable racial feeling in them, but it is not brave. It is essentially abandoning one's post and fleeing. Like Keith said, there's so much harm in this in America. The environmental harm. The liberals are right. The liberals are right on a lot of issues. I know, again, that will shock a lot of your viewers, but they are right on a lot of issues. Urban sprawl, Al Gore is right on urban sprawl, and the Republicans are wrong. We cannot pave America. We cannot cut down every forest in America so every American can sit in a house in the middle of an acre. And, you know, this will destroy our environment, and it will destroy our country. And the whites fleeing the cities has caused this huge sprawl and the destruction of forests and the pollution of water and all of this. The cost in terms of energy. If you come to Atlanta, I can take you to a bridge over the interstates, and you can look as far as the eye can see twice a day at 2 or 3 hour-long snarls of traffic, and hundreds of thousands of white fathers and mothers, too, returning home to their homes 30 and 40 miles out of Atlanta and spending 3.5 to 4 hours a day in a car burning up gasoline and dying in automobile accidents. If you just calculated the amount of time that these people have to spend moving in and out of the city, it's equal to many lifespans every day.
And think about this, Sam. Think of the trillions of dollars that have been spent. Sam.
Yeah.
This is Keith again. Just think about the trillions of dollars that white people have spent on private school education because of the unwise integration, racial integration of the public schools. Think of all the money in this, for gasoline and things like this that you're talking about. That's what is impoverishing white America. That's part of the plan. That's part of the deal. All the money that we should be accumulating for wealth is being spent to try to insulate ourselves from black social pathologies.
Americans move once every 4.5 years. And like you say, you know, the ideal it would be for people to buy a house when they're 25 and live in it and have it paid off by the time they're 55. Instead, all these equities are wiped out. And then these houses have been torn down, and all the raw materials in them are lost. But it is an enormous cost of all this stuff. But one thing about the private schools, to change the subject a little bit, Keith, one of the great disappointments with these private schools was that the curriculum remained the same as in the public schools.
And the reason for that,
opportunity
Sam.
Was lost to have a curriculum that would have told the truth to the students enrolled. Unlike the establishment schools, the truth on many, many subjects, the Civil War, the American Revolution, World War II, the true Roosevelt record, things like the truth of racial differences and the scientific racial differences. Instead, these private schools who at least provided a safe place for the children to be, the rudiments of an education, they can learn the alphabet and the read and write and things like that. A huge opportunity was lost. To my knowledge, none of these private schools adopted proper curriculums.
Well, they did it first, Sam, but here's what happened. Educators all drink from the same poisonous well. They go to the same colleges of education, which have been captured by the cultural Marxists, just like the rest of academia, and they are basically rewarded to the extent that they inflict liberalism on the people under their care. And, for example, in the private schools in Memphis right now, there seems to be this headlong, you know, reckless desire to bring in people from the ghetto, black kids, to the fullest extent possible. Of course, they want to find some guilty white liberal Daddy Warbucks type to finance this. They certainly don't want to take them in for free. But they're just in this feverish hunt for black people, just like Harvard and Yale are in a feverish hunt for black students that can meet their criteria or even come, you know, within a any type of distance at all from it. They are just hungering for it, and that's because, quite frankly, education schools are liberal, and these administrators come from that. That's another thing. If you're going to have private schools, you need to make sure that the administration has values that are consistent with those of the parents that are sending their children to the school.
Exactly so.
Well, gentlemen, let me interject here. We're about to have to put the brakes on this coming up to the end of our first hour. I think now you understand why we wanted to make an issue out of the unrest there, if you want to call it that, in Atlanta. It's an interesting story, but it's not unique to the point where it's never been tried before, this idea of splitting the county in two along obvious racial lines. It won't be the last time this is tried, but Keith and Sam have brought into sharp focus the reason for us bringing this story to your attention tonight. It is the bigger problem of white flight, and I don't think it could have been outlined any better than what you two guys did tonight. Sam, as always, a pleasure to have you on the show. We don't do it enough.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I appreciate it. I congratulate you and all the people that work with you and who fund you, and I hope everybody listening will reach their checkbooks. People ask me, why aren't people doing something about these situations? And I tell them, there are some people who are. When did you support them? When did you help them out?
Yeah, don't
you
send your money to Haiti.
Send
about
it to the political
situation,
you reward them.
Well, Sam, thank you for that endorsement. Keith chimed in by saying, don't send your money to Haiti. Send it to the political send it to Memphis.
All right.
Haiti on the Mississippi.
Anyway, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Sam, and we will talk to you again soon.
Take
good
care.
To talk with right. you, Sam.
Keith, couldn't have gone much better, and I appreciate the role that you played in the interview there with Sam, and hopefully people learned a little bit from it and are going to ponder the ideas that were exchanged there. That's why we have this show.
Yeah, the only advantage I can really see to breaking into another county is to basically clear the decks on government jobs. Sam is absolutely right. Blacks gravitate to public jobs.
Hey, Keith,
like
Keith, you're going to have to hold up there. We got to take a break. Just hold on there. I want to talk to you during the break. Stay tuned, everyone else. We'll be back in just a minute.
Okay.
1 hour down and two to go. Stay tuned. Hour number two of The Political Cesspool comes your way right after these messages.
And Harv leaped to his feet and said, something's got a hold on me. Yow! The day the squirrel went berserk in the First Self-Righteous Church in that sleepy little town of Pascagoula. It was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. They were jumping pews and shouting, well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his Fruit of the Looms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the amen.